Blog Talk Radio.
Excited for the show today. This show has been provided by Nicole Condit Duncan Photography. She is a photographer, a travel photographer, and an international photographer all over the world, a humanitarian and a business consultant who has helped us everywhere. This show is really special to us today. Nicole is also our Listen and Give Global Advisor, and we're so excited to have her provide this show with us today. We have Robert Katende from Uganda, who will be coming on the show, from the Queen. He's the real-life coach of Fiona Mutesi, who was depicted along with him in the Queen of Katwe movie about her and how she learned to play chess. And that was a Walt Disney movie. Then we have Esther Mbabazi. She was actually shared with in the New York Times about her award-winning work on the of teens, and really excited about having her on. She depicted teen life. And then we have Nicole, who's going to share with us about her travels and being a mother, and, you know, comparing what she's seen in her travels abroad in Africa and other countries of everyday life, with Robert and Esther to share in their thoughts and what we can learn from them today. We're going to bring on Jay Logan in just a moment. He is going to give you the news for the first 5 minutes of the program. Please listen in with him. And I'm going to bring Jay on now. Jay is coming in to us from the San Francisco and Oakland area, and I'm coming to you from the New York area. And we are actually live broadcasting to you all over the world. Thank you so much as we bring on Jay Logan. Mr. Logan, how are you today?
Hello, hello, hello. How are you? I am fine today. Gail, it's sunny out here. Started off cold, but I'm fine. California's doing well.
Well, Jay, you know, I know that you're going to bring in the weather for us and, you know, what the forecast is out there, okay? And we look forward to hearing what that is. So would you please give our audience your five-minute broadcast on different areas that are going on around the world, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. Gail, I'm wondering, do you ever play lottery?
Well, I do, and I'm going to bet the lottery right now that you're going to give our audience the right lottery numbers for them to win while I bring on our guests. What do you say about that, Jay?
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about a little lottery here, Gail. You go ahead and do what you got to do, and I'm going to talk about where this money actually goes. You know, North Carolina, they're asking in that state, you know, where do the millions raised by the North Carolina education system lottery money goes? And, you know, a lot of teachers right now across the country, they're going on strike, and you're wondering why do they need more money, you know, with this lottery. Us playing lottery and portions of the lottery should go to the school systems. We're going to break it down here. We're going to find out in North Carolina. Let's find out where those millions might go. So here's a breakdown. I'm not going to read the whole article because you can find this on our website. But I'm going to let you guys know that research by CBS indicates that less than 1% of revenue raised by lottery sales was spent on salaries to benefit lottery employees. So the employees of the lottery, they only get 1% of all those millions. The rest went to education, but the lottery doesn't decide how that money is spent. You know, now North Carolina law says that the General Assembly makes those decisions each year. Each year in a state budget, the legislature can adjust which programs receives funds raised by the lottery. And not every county gets the same amount of lottery revenue. Now, I wonder why it's not split evenly through every county. Maybe the kids, and, you know, that varies, you know. The purpose, they say, for this explanation, well, used to wake county breakdowns. So in North Carolina, last fiscal year, Wake County received a total of $57 million, roughly, and was broken down into five categories. $38 million for non-instructional support, which include the cost of support staff and also it includes of support staff, and a lot of the money that was raised is not going to the counties that need it the most. $10 million was for construction, $3.1 million is for college scholarships, and $3 million is for pre-kindergarten, and $1 million as for financial aid and grants. So this is how North Carolina spends its money. So I don't really see here where they're raising the salaries of teachers. So that might be the reason why a lot of teachers are on strike right now, because they can't really get any money from the lottery system. So you would think that at some point somebody would say, hey, let's give our teachers who work really, really, really hard, let's give them a raise. Nobody's actually saying that. So hopefully we're going to put it out there and let's say let's give these teachers a raise. There's enough money in the lottery for everybody, and we're going to ask that the legislature be changed and the people that are in charge will definitely take into account that they can pay our teachers more, because guess what? Our teachers are the people who teach our kids. And so I think if anybody should get paid a little bit more, it should be them. Next in the news, for those of you that have Apple Watches, Google Pixel Watch is coming out in the fall. Yes, that's right. Google Pixel Watches. Yeah, I just can't wait for these watches to come out. They have branded hardware that can help the company Google, and they have a new OS, and they can compete now with Apple Watch, you know. So now I have an Apple Watch, you know, and Gail knows I love my Apple Watch. So I'm really curious to see how Google is going to perform with their watch. Google is reported preparing its own smartwatch that would bear the Pixel brand currently used on Google's own phones. There'll be a Pixel 1, it'll be the Pixel 3 XL. And sixth generation Pixel Buds that will go along with this watch you can put in your ears. And so I'm looking forward for this watch. It should be out anytime now. It might be out now. It said it'll be out in March, but I haven't seen them yet. But I'm looking for it because I'm wondering how Google's going to do that. It'd be cool to have a Google watch, matter of fact. So I might be actually, you know, thinking about buying one. And I hope you guys check out the Google products. They make good stuff. So I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to buying one of those Pixel watches. Moving right along in our news segment here, I just want to say that we also had some wonderful people that were released from North Korea, and I'm so glad that they are now home safe. And congratulations to America for getting its people back, because I think that's a great thing. We got some of our people back from North Korea, and we'll see where that goes. That's a wonderful news that these people are now free, and good luck to these people that have just returned home. Last but not least, I want to talk about a little bit about our music business here. I'm just waiting for my scroll to scroll up here. Just a second, you guys. Well, technology always slows down when you're trying to get things done. I'm looking at my iPad is not updating for my last segment here. So just bear with me for a second. Wow. Okay. Well, my last segment was it's not coming up on my iPad right now, but it was about some of the people that are very successful in the music business, and I can't really talk about it right now because I'm not getting my
my phone is not updating. So just a second here, you guys. I'll try one more time. Well, right now that probably will conclude my new segment here because my technology is not cooperating with me right now, and I'm not getting my updates on my iPhone. So we'll try one more time here. All right, looks like it's coming now. Okay. My final segment here, still waiting for it to update. We're going to talk about some of the successful people in the music industry. And my phone is updating now. Okay.
Hello, Jay. We are back, and I have on the call, everyone, Nicole Condit-Duncan and Robert Katende. Welcome, Robert, and welcome, Nicole. We are very happy to have you at Listen Give Live Savoy Radio today.
Thank you for having me live on the radio.
Yes. Well, you know, and please meet Jay Logan, who is our co-host here from San Francisco. Jay, would you please meet Nicole, who you know already, and Robert Katende, also who is live with us from Uganda. We're waiting for Esther Mbabadze, and she should be on shortly, but we're going to move forward with the call while we wait for her, okay? And, you know, we just want Nicole and Robert, Jay and I are going to ask you a series of questions. We will actually get into a discussion about it. And we ask that you tailor your answers to those questions and don't give out all the goodies ahead of time, because we want to get everything that we can from you while we're on the call so that we can learn from both of you. And our audiences can also learn from you as well. Is that okay with both of you?
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
That's fine with me, too, Gail. Looking forward to talking to you.
Okay, great. So we're going to start off with, for those of you, as we mentioned before, Nicole is an international photographer, business consultant, and humanitarian. She's traveled many, many countries. I'm envious of it. She's had amazing experiences, and we feel she brings such an enlightenment to the call. Robert Katende has done amazing work He is the real life coach from the Queen of Katwe movie for Fiona Mutesi. He has brought youth to learn about chess that has increased their life lessons and also increased their academic performance. And he continues and strives to support the youth in Uganda and really youth all over the world, as well as Esther and Bob, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, and Nicole have as well. So we're going to start out right now with this first question. Robert and Nicole, you both have experience with youth, you know, there in Africa, especially Robert, you living there. I'd like to know, what do you feel teens face there, being the population is really youth today, okay? And especially when it comes to academics, what do you think life is like, you know, there? Robert, would you start us off with that?
Yeah, thank you very much once again for having us. I hope I'm live, I'm clear, and you can hear me very well. Yeah, it's such an honor for me to be able to connect to such a show. Yes, definitely, it's good that you are starting with such a very fundamental point that has to do with education. Honestly, I can tell you that it does break my heart already when it comes to education. And seeing the trend of the Ugandan education, how it is now kind of going on, it has, education has basically been commercialized. And you find that for us as social workers, people who are reaching out to the less privileged communities and the youth to see how we can restore hope and transform their lives and help them to actually break the vicious cycle, which seems to be like a generational curse because their parents never got an opportunity, therefore they don't have what it takes for them to afford the commercialized education. So it's quite absurd to see the trend and how actually the whole situation is going, because when you talk of public schools in Uganda, if you can afford, even the Fountain of Honor himself, he tells you that the public schools are for the poor. But when you go there, that even actually the services are all poor, because no one can afford and be able to take their children to public school. So for sure, personally, I interface with the children. I actually do stretch with my foundation work to even do support children in private schools as I can be able to realize resources, because that's the only fundamental factor of change that can actually empower someone holistically. But it's quite something which I can't really explain that it has in a better way right now. The trend is, or the curve is just going downward. So you find that the poor will definitely continue to be poor, and then the rich will always continue to thrive because they can afford to take their children to school.
Well, we thank you for that, your thoughts on that. Nicole, could you weigh in on this? You have traveled extensively in Africa, okay? And just, you know, being on both sides of the equator and actually just in the U.S., being from the U.S., living in the United Kingdom, can you shed your thoughts on what Robert has said and also, that you know, your personal opinions through looking through your lens, so to speak?
Well, I think Robert has brought up some great points about the accessibility of education. And I think one of the things that I find very inspiring about what Robert has done is the understanding that education just isn't about reading and writing and mathematics. Those are critical life skills, but there are other huge life skills that people in the middle class, the upper middle class, are able to give their children, whether that's arts lessons, you know, extra time in sports teams, music lessons. All of those things are what, you know, create a full education and are the life skills you need. So I think what Robert has done and what I've seen in successful programs other places is this connecting to the whole child, giving them opportunities, whether it's, you know, life skills about how to use a knife and fork, whether it is access to sports, or you know, the ability to create I think, are critical pieces that make you able to succeed in life. It's not just about, you know, sitting at a desk and learning to read and write, as important as those are. It's understanding how you can participate in the bigger world. And so programs like Robert's, programs like one we saw in South Africa called Emibala, that is providing children with school uniforms but also with arts and ballet and drama classes, these things are the critical pieces to education.
Wow. Well, you know, I can actually say, you know, Jay, do you have any thoughts about what they've just shared? Hello, Jay. Did we lose you? Okay. I hope we didn't lose him. Jay, are you there?
Hello?
Jay? Okay. Well, we seem to have possibly lost Jay. We're going to go on to the next question. You know, Robert and Nicole, the way academics is taught today in school, Nicole, you just touched on this. Robert, I'd like to know what you thought. What do you think is missing with the way academics is taught in school there in Kampala and even in the West, Robert, because you have visited the West as well as been, you know, you teach every day in Kampala with the youth. What do you think is missing?
Yeah, thank you very much for the question, Joshua. What is missing, I think, is the heart and the holistic approach to education. Just like Nicole was sharing, as I said, education has been commercialized. Right now, I can tell you that all school entities, they are after children passing an exam, but not actually to understand and be empowered. No matter how they pass the exam, they want to see those big grades. But if someone scores a distinction, then the school is making more money because all people who can afford, they will usher their children to the same school. But when you take children on a personal basis, try to check and find out how competent they are, how they have developed their soft skills, you can be shocked. And that is the trend. I think what is really missing is the value, the content of the education itself. Because you find children in class, they recite, they just cram to pass exams, they actually revise past papers to know how to pass, because the exams they have national exams, they are now all working for national exams. So when it comes to blending in into the society, having the ability to thrive with the soft skills, with the critical thinking, with all other necessary skills, they are nowhere, and that's what really is happening. Because that's why you find currently it's very hard to have, right now in Uganda, it's really very hard to really feel proud of a kid that is really now being educated, because you find they are lacking in so many ways. There are so many people with the papers, but nothing they can actually show or do, potentially. They cannot even stand, they don't even have the confidence, because they know they cannot do it. So the missing component, I think, I know it all started in Uganda when they privatized the education and the government. Before the universal education, the government or the public schools were the best in the country. The moment they declared them all to be free education, private schools was like a boom. And all the students and all the government ministers, none of them even has a kid in the public school. So that is, I think, a missing component. And when you go to the private schools, they don't also have a content. They are after passing the exams to see how they can really maximize the number of children coming because they are passing the exams.
You know, Nicole, I would love for you to weigh in on this, because I know that you have some experience in understanding this, and we've talked about it in the past with you, with Jay as well. We'd love for you to weigh in on your thoughts. And Nicole and Robert, if you could just talk a little louder and a little clearer from some of the background noise, because I know that it is there, and we apologize. So, Nicole, please let us know what you think.
Well, I think Robert has just you know, really nailed some critical issues. And I think not just for Uganda, but for education around the world. I think we are using two things. I think one is this issue about teaching to exams, I think, is a model that is hurting our children. Not only are we stealing their childhood from them, we aren't educating them. You know, what we're saying to them, all that matters is memorizing these answers and performing on a test, which, you know, so they don't end up educated, they don't end up excited about learning, and they aren't prepared for the world of work, which is actually about problem solving in many cases. So if all you've done is memorize answers, you're not ready for work. We're using an old industrial model about going and standing on an assembly line in the age of information. And whether you're in Uganda or Silicon Valley or Paris, you're expected to solve problems in the workplace today. And we're not preparing them for that with that. And I think the other critical point Robert's bringing up about the commercialization of education is critical. And, you know, whether it is the continued dominance of private schools in the UK, the move to charter schools in the US that are profit making, or, as he was saying, the commercialization of schools in Uganda, all of those things are not about our children. Those are about profit-making and not turning out a generation of children that are educated. So I think what we're seeing is, you know, a lot of connections around the world in how we are failing our children. And all of these things are connected, and all of us are connected. And I think these dialogues we're having are the way we can start learning from each other and finding the best practices. You know, let's get sport back into education. Let's get chess into education. Let's get debate club in there. Let's give these children the skills they need to succeed in life and to be happy, successful people, not just monetarily, but as in their mental health as well.
Well, that's going to definitely touch on another question from us at the end with Nicole, with you and Robert. Jay, I know you had a very important question for them. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how you doing there? I'm ready. Can you hear me now?
Hi, Jay.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Oh, good, good, good. How is everybody?
Great, thanks.
We are doing well, thank you.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, my question is to answer to you is,
did we lose you again, Jay?
Esther, you shared the life of three teenagers in Uganda. Now, do you think the game of chess would help these teens learn life's lessons and improve their academic performances? And you weigh in too, Nicole, because I'm just wondering, do you guys think that the chess, by teaching them the game of chess, would help these teens learn life's lessons and improve their academic performance?
I'm happy to answer. Is Esther on, Dale?
No. He meant that for Robert. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
We're sorry. Robert, do you...
Yes. Yeah, thank you very much for the question. I would say absolutely yes. And especially that is, I would say, that's my philosophy of... using chess as an empowerment tool, as an academic tool. But we are using it now to try to develop the critical thinking ability, and we develop both sides of the brain, both the responsive and then the creativity one as well. And with chess, basically what we did emphasize, especially with the children we were working with, is to me, it doesn't so much matter for you to win the chess. What matters is how you manage to integrate the concept into your lifestyle to make things happen in life, to be a problem solver in life. As you sit down on the chessboard and you weigh options, you analyze before you make a decision. I love to see that applied into your day-to-day life situation. And that is always my core. That is the gift of my all of foundation work. And I have seen this happen. I have seen this work amazingly. And I cannot even in any way regret for what actually it can really add. True, I know sometimes people say, oh, chess is not academic. But I think it even goes beyond that, because whatever we do in life, it's all chess, basically. But the only challenge we have that our children have not been given an opportunity to train in these important values, these virtues for life. But when you get to the chessboard, now you say, fine, you're going to play, fine, then I want you to learn how other problems, how are you managing time? That's where we have a chess club. Then how do you make the right decision? Because even in life, we are faced with so many options. But what makes you go for a certain decision? So when we get to the chessboard, we are playing in a funny way, we are enjoying it, but at the same time, we are developing these fundamental values in life. So even when it comes to academics, the value, you cannot, in all academics, you cannot teach children how to win. But when they sit on the chessboard, automatically they are compelled to think for the different.
He might know you're watching.
Okay, Nicole, what are your thoughts, Nicole?
I actually when the movie The Queen of Tsukami came out, I looked at my husband and I said, you know, this is so inspiring. And when I was reading Robert's story earlier, I just think he has found a way that really does express, you know, something very fundamental. You know, I am a terrible chess player, Robert, so I might have to come to Uganda and sit with your smallest children. But, you know, chess in particular, board games in general, they're about strategy. They're about thinking ahead. And, you know, that's a critical life skill. If you can't understand the impact of your action today on your life tomorrow, you're going to struggle to make anything of yourself. And I think, too, while it's not about winning and losing, learning to lose, learning to make a mistake, and figuring out how to not make that mistake again is something that is very difficult to do. And the more children are able to play, the more they're going to learn those lessons. So I find Robert's work and his ethos just very inspiring. And, you know, if we could replicate Robert in every school in the world, I think the world would be a better place.
Thank you.
Wow. Well, you know, Jay, I would love for you to weigh in on your thoughts about what Nicole and Robert have shared here. While I bring in Esther and Bobzy, I'd love for you, all three of you, to share your thoughts about this together. Just, you know, dialogue here a little bit, because this is quite interesting.
Okay. Robert, I play chess. Now, I might not be as good as you, but I've noticed that I've won a couple of chess championships when I was in junior high school. But when it enabled me to focus, so I'm thinking that the children that you taught or that you shared this chess strategy with, they have grown up and they now have been able to focus better on life's challenges. Would you say that, Robert?
Yeah, actually, it's not even after growing up. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Like I said, I won a couple of junior chess championships as a kid, and I've noticed as me being an adult, by me playing chess, it enabled me to focus better on things that I wanted to achieve. And so I was wondering, did this strategy help the kids to? They're probably a lot older now. Did you see them advance as far as their focusing and being more attentive in life's goals? Did it help the children focus a lot better by them learning how to play the game of chess?
Yes, absolutely, yes, it does. And that's, yes, when I talk about the pioneers, if I can tell you now, the movie is now portraying the pioneers. All the pioneers currently are the instructors, the ones actually who are now teaching the rest, ones moving other nations to empower others. As we started, they were not having any hope in life. But even as I speak to tomorrow, I'm sending off one of the pioneers to go to Budapest in Hungary.
Mm.
Going to be there for a whole week teaching. But this is a kid who has grown up with Islam. He's one portrayed in the movie as well. And there are others that are traveling to other places to empower our people. It has been just focus, but to realize their potential in life, they say, wow, we can make it if you put our people in the and just as Nicole said, it's not about losing and winning. But even in life, everyone in life, we all find barriers, we all get frustration. But we have to start again. So we get all these skills from the test. That you lose a thing, give up, you go and fight your face in the sun, you have to receive the time and move on. These are all times that are invented. Now, the watch is going to be inspired by a live player so that they teach as a platform to train body.
Wow, interesting. Nicole, did you weigh in? Do you play chess, Nicole, or do you see the advantages of learning?
I sadly know. I know how to move the pieces, but I have never been a very good chess player. My my husband is a very good chess player. My oldest son is a very good chess player. But you know, I've never quite gotten to. I've never quite gotten as far as the strategy, which I'm really actually embarrassed about. But I do think, you know, we've always played a lot of games, and I do think the ability to play a game helps your focus and is such a good teaching moment, whatever that game is, that, you know, I think it's a wonderful life skill. And I think, too, with chess, you know, when you look around cities all over the world, there are people on the, you know, in public parks, on the beachfront, playing chess, and what a great way to connect and meet people as well.
Yes. Nicole, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we've brought Esther and Babab Z on to the call right now. Esther, please say hello to Nicole Conde-Duncan and your fellow countryman, Robert Katende, who's also in Kampala, and Nicole, who has so graciously brought this programming today to us. And she is based in the United Kingdom. And then you have Jay Logan on the call, who is based in San Francisco, and our co-host. And I am Gail Davis, as you know, and I'm based in New York. And I'm sorry to interrupt everyone, because I could hear you're getting into an amazing dialogue here. But I wanted to bring Esther in. And Esther, sorry to just kind of throw you in here, but I know we all don't have much time. Esther, we have been talking about the importance of chess, and as you know, Robert Katende has the SOM Chess Academy in Kampala. He was the real coach out of Queen of Katwe. Nicole is an international photographer, business consultant, humanitarian. She has traveled so many countries, just recently back from Kenya on doing some photography that we can't wait to share with the public. And Esther, recently you were written up in the New York Times by James Estrin for the work you did on depicting the lives through photography, journalism, and documentary format of three teenagers, okay, and the three different lives they lead. I have a specific question for you that I'd like all of us to get into in the discussion. Three teenagers leading three different lives. One who's like really on the streets of Kampala, another one who comes from a wealthy background, and another one who's extremely religious. I want you to tell us, what was life like for those three teenagers, you know, in a few short sentences, and then tell us how you think what Robert does with the game of chess would helped the lives of teenagers in Kampala, and how what Nicole does with traveling around the world, sharing the experiences of of the people of those countries, how that would also help the teens in Kampala to travel and learn. Can you bring us into your world and your lens through that with the audience?
Well, sorry for coming in late. We had network issues. But to the topic, I think what Robert is doing is really, really important, especially because many young people don't get so much opportunity to explore their talents and skills and get opportunities to learn more and express the passions that they have. Like the people I documented, the girl in the village, for now there is no chance that she even get to know what chess is, you know, because it's within the village, first of all, it's very hard to access a formal education, and if she does, it's going to be only for the better. So if activities like what like chess and other mind games and even physical games like netball, football, co-curricular activities are brought out to kids in different situations, I think it would be very, very helpful for the young people. Like, so that the girl that I documented from the background,
we can't hear you too well, Esther. It's going in and out a little bit. I'm sorry. If you could okay, there we go. I can hear you now better.
Okay. I was saying that the rural, the children in the rural areas of Uganda don't get so much opportunity. But I was giving an example of the girl that I documented in the urban areas coming from a wealthy background. She goes to an international school, and at the international school, they teach an international curriculum. They do co-curricular activities. She gets to play the piano. She gets to... Are you hearing me?
Yes. Can someone mute themselves in the background, please? Robert, I believe that may be you. Right, just a moment. Robert, could you mute yourself in the background? Great, thank you, Esther. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying, like for her, because she has the opportunity to go to these fancy schools, she gets the opportunity to learn all the different skills and passions, and she gets to follow what she wants to take on in life. While in most of the schools, that's not an option. So for me, having such an activity going on, like in the slums of Kampala, in the rural areas of Kampala, teaching kids to play chess, to learn all of these other games, and actually follow through to be world champions, that's like the best thing that can happen to them, because most of them know nothing about these games in the first place.
Wow. Robert and Nicole, I would love for you to weigh in on what Esther has shared. Hello.
Hi. Well, I you know, first of all, Esther, I'm so excited to talk to you because I read the profile in the New York Times last week when it came out. So the opportunity to talk to you is really wonderful. And, you know, I think Esther's raised some great points that, you know, the children need these opportunities to expand their horizons. And whether you're in a rural setting or an urban setting, you know, that presents to you different opportunities. But if you're struggling to survive, you're not going to have them. But everybody can find a way to create. We can give people ways to engage, to see a bigger world, and I think to, you know, to develop their skills. And it doesn't have to be big, expensive computer programs. It can be a chessboard. It can be a deck of cards. It can be, you know, it can be a camera in somebody's hand. And all of those things will give children self-confidence and give them some skills to make their way in the world.
Robert, what is your thoughts? I really want you to weigh in on this, Robert, please.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I thank you also, Esther, for coming online as well. For sure, I personally believe that every person has a seed of excellence that only needs to be nurtured for them to realize their full potential in life. And I have seen this not happen in my
Robert, we cannot hear you. I'm sorry. Can you, we cannot hear you.
No, the connection is terrible.
Robert, we cannot hear you. Hello, Robert? Robert? We could hear you just that second. If you could come.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Very well. Thank you so much.
I have a program running in Gulu. Last weekend, I had a team of girls, they are 14 years. They came to the national. Before, they were lacking the confidence because they are from the rural setting. When they hear coming to Kampala, they feel they cannot even make it. They came to Kampala, participated in the national event, and they were challenging even the boys in the primary category, and they emerged the champion. Their self-esteem is boosted. You cannot tell them. Oh, people tell them you are from the road, saying you are from Guru, you cannot do this. Now they come, even realize that they can express themselves well in the chessboard. So that kills their inner ability. Because at the end of the day, what makes the change has to come from within. If you don't believe in yourself, you can't make it happen in life. So building these bodies in life, I think that is really very, very important. And we should not miss that when we are empowering the youth to evolve that self-esteem. The moment you lose it, then you can't achieve. Even when you know something, you really lack the confidence to do it.
We truly thank you for that. If everyone could mute out when others are speaking, it would be helpful because we can hear background noise and we know that it's, you know, calls from around the world. And we apologize to the three of you and to the audience. We'll be better audible the next time we have the three of you on. Jay, you have a very important question about music to all three of them.
Yes, and this goes to Esther, Nicole, and Robert. For the three of you, how does music play a role in the quality of life for young people? And each can answer.
Thank you. Maybe if you
can
hear me.
Okay, well, yes, Robert, we'll start with you since you're in Uganda. If you could stay right there and not move, that would be great. Jay, would you repeat your question, please?
Yeah. How does music play a role in the quality of life for young people? Robert?
Okay. Robert?
Hello?
Robert?
Yes, can I weigh in? Can you hear me?
No, you know what, Robert, we'll come right back to you because we can't hear you too well, and so we'll come right back to you. Nicole, would you share with us how the answer to that question?
I think there's two things about music. I think one is it is a way to express yourself. Whether you're making the music or listening to the music, there is music out there that sort of, you know, suits any mood and emotion. So when you need perking up, when you want to dance it out, when you're angry, all of those things are available in music. I think the other piece of that is that it connects you. It's like reading. It makes you realize you're not alone. There's, you know, that your struggles are not just yours. When you hear something, you're part of something bigger. So I think music, and I think it taps into a different part of our brain too. I think one of the things that resonated with me in Esther's story was when she talked about the young man who was going out and clubbing and kind of trying to make a life. And I thought that, you know, you could see that story anywhere. And I think that's such a wonderful thing about music, is that it ties us together and we find rhythms that we can all enjoy. So I think it's such a critical part. And back to the discussion we were having before about different parts of education, I think when you've seen schools that have in the U.S. that have taken out their music curriculums, you see people's grades suffer because music does help our brains. So I think it's a part of education. I think it's a part of life, and I think it's a part of that youthful experience to go create music.
Wow. Great. And music does. It's studies show that music actually improves academic performance. Esther, would you share with us what you think? How music? Because one of the students that you depicted his life was into music quite a bit. I ask that everyone mute out while Esther speaks. Please mute your phones, everyone, as Esther speaks. Can you tell us how you think, Esther, music supports academic achievement and helps youth in their life, no matter whether it's Kampala or anywhere else?
I think talking about music in the academic sense is different from talking about music in daily life, kind of enrichment. When I was documenting the young teenagers, the one who had music classes from school, she took it more as a cut of school, just a session of class that she had to do to pass and get her marks. While the young boy from the eastern part of the country, he was into hip-hop dance, he would download the music, he would go step further to watch other music videos and teach himself the new dance moves. And for him, that was a way present himself to the world. He would go an extra mile to borrow a camera from a friend and make videos of himself dancing to the music that he likes. And he has a 3,000 followers on Instagram. You know, it's crazy. But it's something that motivates him to wake up every day and go practice, learn new dance moves, and he hopes that along the way he can get like an advertisement gig, he can get to be in a music video of someone else, he can get to choreograph some other dancers, so it's a big dream. But it starts from this one thing, that is passion. So his passion is about dancing, and he's not dancing without music. So he's always with headphones, listening to music, he knows every new song that comes out, he knows every dance song that comes out in Uganda, and he tries to keep himself on the international level very well known. So to me, that's inspiring because he's 18. That would sound like a grown-up young man, but in Uganda, it's the age that you're an adult, so the age that you start noticing things around you and being able to make decisions by yourself, and he's already doing this for like 3 years now. For me, I believe music is a big part of the young people's life, regardless of where you are, because if you can do music and think and create something to it, then you just have to learn or find ways of making it work so that you can keep doing that, because it's what the passion is about.
Robert, would you please weigh in as well on the question from Jay of how you think music plays a role in the quality of life for young people?
It does.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I kind of believe that.
I'm sorry? Go ahead, Robert.
I think that music is not any different from chess, because it really helps the youth, the children, to express themselves. They get to discover who exactly they are. They can be able, this is emotional, it really brings their all sense out, and it can also contribute greatly to their other skills, because they get to discover themselves. Actually, to help students for self-actualization, to discover who they are, to be able to express themselves, and that helps them to achieve so many other things. Because when you talk of education has so many other factors that contribute to it, which sometimes are neglected. But things like chess, things like music, those help the children to develop those soft skills required to enhance the academic area as well.
My last question from Jay and I to all of you, and this is kind of like an open thing to talk about. You know, chess is a game that bridges the gap from all generations. It allows both young and old, any age, to learn from each other. Esther and Nicole, you both are into international photography. Photography allows young and old to learn from each other, because it teaches us to look through the lens, okay? To actually look through the lens of what we're seeing on the other side. So it's we're learning from each other, because if the young is teaching the older, or the older is teaching the younger, they're teaching each other to see each other's perspective through photography and through the lens, and learning to tell their stories as well as collective stories of one another. At the same time, youth, you know, it's been said, you know, and Nicole, you and I have had this conversation, you know, some youth at times do feel like they're self-entitled. There's some youth, you know, we were all young at one time, we want to know everything. Sometimes I've talked to youth and I've said to them, you know, do you feel like sometimes your future is being taken away from you, because you're, you know, when you get out of high school and college these days, it's like you're there to save the world. And I've talked to, I would have to say, in the last couple of years, thousands of youth, because of my travels, and Jay has well. And what they say to me is, oh, I can't admit that, because my parents got to have their life, and now we're kind of being dictated to subconsciously to save the world for the future, not because of the mess we feel you left, but just because that's the society's latest trend. And so my question to you is, are we being, you know, how do you see one, do you see that the, you know, chess and photography are a beautiful way to bridge a gap between all ages? And number two, do you agree with some of the youth that we should just let them live their lives and not have these messages coming into them that the world is this way and you've got to save it, you know? Let them just live their life like Steve Jobs did and all the other people, and let them make their mistakes along the way so that they can, too, grow up into the human beings that they want to by choice. I'd love to know all of your thoughts about this. And Nicole and Esther and Robert, I know you can't wait to get in on this, okay, and Jay. So, Nicole, I definitely, in this case, I want to start with you. I want to know what your thoughts are.
You know, I think we have put an enormous amount of pressure on young people. I think a little bit because we can now communicate so broadly. And every time we hold up a model and you know, say, God, see what this person did at 15 and they're changing the world, it sends this message that if you're not doing that, you're failing. And I think that's not true, and I agree with you, it's not fair. I think the other trend that's happening demographically is that Europe and the United States, after the Second World War, had a huge baby boom. Much like, you know, we were talking about Uganda having a huge youth population now, the U.S. and Europe had that in the 1950s and 60s, and we're seeing them age now, and it looks like an opportunity for a sea change of things to come. And it's very easy to look at the millennials and Generation Z and go, now's your moment. You can fix it all because we didn't. And I think it is. I think it's on the one hand, we want to be sending people the message that you as an individual can change things. You know, you're not disempowered. You don't have to be stuck. Every little thing you do can matter, but we don't want to be sending the message that everything you do has to be for a bigger, greater good, and you should live your life. I think it's a very difficult thing. I think, you know, Esther's photos, taking pictures and showing people's lives shows people that they have a voice, and people see them, which I think is incredibly important. Robert working with all of these children shows them that their lives are important, that, you know, they have a huge amount of self-worth, or that they have a huge amount of worth, and then they have to develop into, you know, that self-worth that he was talking about. You know, how we then don't go too far and putting pressure and saying everything you do is about changing the world, I think it's very difficult, particularly for a generation that's online and in touch all the time. I think it's a difficult balance, and I think we are asking a lot of people. But and I think young people actually ought to be turning around to people my age and going, "You go make a difference. You know, you be the change you want to see too." I think they should be throwing it back to the rest of us. So anyway, I'm hopeful for the world, but I also realize that, you know, we've all got to be part of this solution, and we've all got to be part of what's happening in the world.
Robert, please weigh in on this. You and I have had this conversation on the last radio show about how we think that youth and adults can connect with each other and the pressure on the youth today. What do you think about what Nicole says, and what, you know, just your overall thoughts when you're working with youth every day?
Yeah, I think one thing which has to be very clear and very fundamental is that in life we all need mentors. I think that is the component which is missing in some of the youth's lives. Like, they just grow anyhowly, but they need to be a mentor. There is a need for a mentor, someone who can identify some of the things you may not even be able to realize in your life, and then they guide you to go through that journey. I don't agree with just allowing children to grow anyhowly, because when you just come to the structures, I take an example for Uganda, but anywhere else in the world, there has to be guidance, there has to be love, there has to be genuine care, where someone will come in and say, "Hey, you have this potential, you can really work towards this and get it to happen." But the only challenge we have sometimes that you find, I know in Uganda the culture somehow saves us, but I've been in the U.S., I've been in other countries as well, and you find how the parents coerce the children for taxes. They don't allow the children to fail. So eventually they are haunting the children, and they end up losing their self-esteem. But I think a mentor will really get you on the road and guide you along the journey. You fail and then you can get up. Let us move on. I think that's something which we shouldn't really disregard, and I just wish that every child had a mentor. Sometimes that mentor may not even be a parent, but someone who can be there, willing to stand and guide you along the way to be the best you can be in life.
And Esther, would you please weigh in? Esther, your phone was going in and out before. We really want to get what you your thoughts on this. Would you please share your thoughts with us on this subject?
Actually, I would like to repeat the question again, because I was getting you different pieces and I didn't want to interrupt.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear you.
And the first thing is to say the question again.
We can't hear you too well, Esther.
I think she couldn't hear the question, Gail.
Oh, I'm sorry. So the question is, Esther, what are your thoughts about young and old together? You know, using things like chess and photography and things of that nature
to bring young and old together across all generations, as well as the pressure on young people today to feel like they have to save the world rather than just living their own journey in their own life without that added pressure. What are your thoughts on that?
Right. So speaking from a country which is the second youngest in the world, I believe there is not much that is bridging between the elderly generation and the young generation. So over 78% of Uganda's population is under the age of 30. So that's a lot. And only just about 3% of the population is over 65. So that means there's a huge gap between the young people and the elderly people, and there's nothing that has been done to bridge the gap. I mean, people still relate in terms of family, but that is also kind of keeping the elderly people in this hierarchy position where they're like, so they're like the guardians of the knowledge, the elderly people. So the young people at the same time feel like we're young. What we're experiencing right now is nothing that the elderly people know. We're in this technology era. We have WhatsApp. We can just video chat with our friends. We don't. Our elderly people won't have the video chat on their phones. They won't even know how to use a smartphone. So it's like the young people are in this bubble, which is so cool and vibrant, and they kind of engage with each other, but at the same time, they respect the elderly people, but there is nothing that is making it to come to a point in between where you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to this game where we're playing with the elderly people. I really have fun there because then you get to talk about this and this and this, and you get to experience this and this. It's not there. And I feel like those are things that need to be worked on, but it actually leads me to the second question about the burden that the young people get to feel. In a country where it's mostly young people, I feel like we're saving this to be the order of the day. We are responsible for what tomorrow is. And when I was starting to document the young people, my aim was to show the life that we are living right now. How are we living right now? We know in a few years we're going to be the elderly population. And at one point, Uganda is going to be mostly elderly population because it's over 78% of the population is under 30. Then in 30 years, we're going to be the elderly population. And if there's nothing that's done with us right now, the young people, then we're not going to prepare for what comes in the future. We are responsible for the future because we are the future. We're going to be in that place that we are right now not wanting to associate with. Right now we're like, oh, those people are old. They're old. They live their life. Like, what are we doing right now? Are we living our life? If not, then we will never live it because in the future we're going to be the people that never got to live their life when they were young. So for me, it comes to a point where we have to balance both of these things. We have to live as young people, but at the same time, we have to think of the future. Because in the end, it's going to be an old, a country with elderly people. And right now, not many people think of it. Not many people see it that way. I personally, before I started the project, I actually didn't realize that almost everyone I knew was young, apart from my parents. And when I actually started thinking a bit deeper, I realized that everyone I know is young, and we don't know that, we don't realize that because we've been born into that, we're living with that. And the elder people we know are like very so high up there, so far away there. And even if we have them in our daily life, we don't connect with them so much from, like, through games or at events or something, which are very important. So for me, it feels like in the end, young people do need to live a young life, especially here in Uganda. I mean, I haven't talked to Uganda, so that's where I know. But we do need to live as young people. But at the same time, we have to learn to incorporate the elder generation into this because they are where we are heading. And we need to know how to plan better because in a few years, the country is going to be like, it's going to have a lot of elderly people who are not planned for.
Jay, would you weigh in on your thoughts as well, please, and then we will close the call with everyone.
I sure will, Gail. Now, you know, kids all over the world, there's a big generation gap there. One situation happened where one of our friends, their kids got locked up into this room. So, Gail, so you guys remember the old rotary dial phones, right? So they were locked in the room. They didn't have a phone. They couldn't get out of this room. And they didn't know what that was. Actually, they didn't know that was a telephone that was hanging on the wall. Let alone did they know how to use the rotary phone. So a security guard finally came in and said, hey, why didn't you use the phone? Well, they didn't know what it was. They thought it was some type of contraption that you might order food on, and they didn't know how to work it. So it's a communication thing here. They don't know what typewriters are, but they know what an iPad is. They don't know what the rotary phone is, but they know what an iPhone is. So somehow, our generation, kind of like what Robert's saying, they need mentors to teach them that, you know, that we are the same because they consider us the older generation and, you know, they're faster and quicker and smarter and better. And so the kids right now, we definitely need to embrace them and try to get them to realize that we are all people throughout the world. And we all have something in common because right now the gap is so wide right now with new technology. You know, like we might can't use some of these apps on our phones as quick as the kids can. They can just learn. It's just natural for them. So we definitely need to mentor these young kids and try to get them to understand that there isn't an age generation gap. There isn't the old people and new and young people are the same. We're all people. We're not segregated. I think that's what makes kids – could respond better if they realize that there's no segregation. There's no, you can't break us apart and say, you're old and you're new. You're this and you're that. We have to teach unity. And unity is the key to try to educate these children and get them on the same journey that we all are on. And just the chess playing is beautiful because by playing chess, Robert playing chess with these kids, it allows them to interact with older people. And that's what we need, interaction, Gail. And that's my whole thing. And me and you, Gail, we talked about interaction with these kids. We're going to have to go and interact with them because I think they're a little bit brighter and smarter and quicker and faster. And they don't want to some of them, not all of them, don't want to interact with older people. But if they don't, we need to kind of push that button and push their buttons and get them to interact with the older generation so we can become one and be in unity together.
Well, I'm gonna end it on an aspect with, first of all, thanking everyone for being on the show, and end it with an aspect that one time Robert Contende and I spoke on and also Nicole spoke on. I think we all have our thoughts here, but the one thing I think we have to remember is to stop. I think we've become a society where we see the kids, we have a name and a label for everything. I think that when we were young, we probably thought we knew more than the older generation. But I think now, I do agree with Jay, there is a wider gap, but I think it's a wider gap because everything arises in language. And because everything arises in language, a dollar bill would not be a dollar bill unless somewhere someone had created the name dollar bill. So I'm not saying that we don't have to put a name on something. You have to. But I think that we have to be careful in saying, oh, that's the older and that's the younger. I think we just have, because as Nicole said earlier, you know, society is moving so quickly. And it's almost like the mental brain has to catch up at times because there's overwhelming amount of content. There's so much going on and available to youth any age. We have sexism, we have ageism, we have economic classism, we have so many isms in society, we have fake news, we have just so much that's like a divide and conquer almost amongst factors, not just young and old, but just cutting into so many things, that we have to find a way to just really connect with each other, just going back to the basics of, you know, what Nicole said, what Esther and Robert and all of us are saying, which is just really learning from each other, you know, sitting with each other, connecting. And, you know, I just want to also remind all of us that when we were six, when we're 16, we don't do the same things as we did at six. And when we're 36, we don't do the same things as 26. So that keeps going. And as you get older, you learn more wisdom. So we have to allow each other to grow and open the space for ourselves to grow. You know, that is the basics. I think if we can start there, just allowing, just being with each other as we are. And really, that gives us a chance to see what's going on around us. I think that what Esther and all of us are doing in different ways of taking ourselves off of technology and engaging and having one-on-one conversations that brings us back to the core of who we are as everyday human beings. And if we can begin with that, then we can begin to be responsible for, like, the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which is no poverty or zero hunger. Because if I help you get a job or Nicole helps me get a job, then she's just ended poverty. Or if Robert invites someone in his home to have a bite to eat, he's just helped them not be hungry for the night, okay? And if Esther depicts someone in photography that needs to go to school because they pay for school in Africa at times, then she may have just helped funding to go for quality education. So I think if we look at how we fundamentally can have everything work, like all services and everything be in a basis of equality for all, which hopefully we'll get there one day, I think that the burden on youth will be different, and they will live their life like we did with choice. So that's the only thing that we can hope for. And we, Nicole, we thank you for bringing this episode to us today. I would love to see, you know, a project come out of this. I know I'm putting everyone on the spot, but I would love to see Nicole and Esther come together on maybe a photography project. I'd love to see. We are going to support Robert Katende with the SOM Chess Academy. We're going to be working with him as a team to not only build funding, but to build awareness of what chess provides. And, you know, and Jay and I work from music to international affairs, so we will be supporting in all those areas, and we will supply all of the three of you with each other's information. And we just thank you individually. Again, this is brought to you by Nicole Condit Duncan Photography. You can find her at Duncan Blog on Instagram and on DuncanBlog.photography online. You can find Esther and Babazi on Esther, EstherMbabazi.com to learn more about her. You can find Robert Katende at the Robert Katende Initiative, which is robertkatende.org, robertkatende.org. And this is also brought to you by Listen Give Savoy Radio and Listen Give Savoy Organizations. That's Listen Give Initiative and the Savoy, and also Mango Lemon Group and Software Sounds with Jay Logan. Thank you so much, everyone, for being a part of this, and we hope to have you on again. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Nicole. Thank you.